Bears Roundtable is powered by Xfinity.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Chicago Bears Roundtable. Jeff Joniak along with Tom Thayer from News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM WBBM, along with senior writer for ChicagoBears.com, Larry Mayer, and a very special guest today, our number 46, Doug Plank, the former Chicago Bear, one of the, I gotta say it, you are one of the legendary names because people loved how you played, and Larry's going to have a very difficult time, everybody, being a part of this roundtable because anytime you mention Doug Plank, he starts to hyperventilate and sweat. You're his idol. And for good reason, but he's going to have a hard time because this is no longer professional. This is personal.
Let me just say that Tom is no longer my favorite former Bear in the building. But you know, and
we're going to let you lead and carry today.
How about that? So, I mean, playing football in the backyard back in the day, other cities, you know, kids were Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw. We were Plank and Fensick. That's
yes,
all.
The hitman.
Love it.
Absolutely.
You know,
love
if we played in the backyard, we didn't have the fortunate, you know, ability to wear the pads like you two guys, but, you know, you were Walter Payton diving over the pile. You load up all your cushions in the house, and you know, the kids come on, and you hit like you. Everybody wanted to do that.
Well, offensive linemen had a bigger fear of Doug Plank because they were worried about standing around the pile after
getting
a rib shot from Doug Plank. But who else in the 61,500 Soldier Field has someone that dresses up like you? Doug, you're a character in the stands.
You know, it's really humbling to come back here. Number one, you forget how much you love the city, you know, in terms of just not just being at Soldier Field, but the whole downtown lakefront. And most importantly, just the organization, you know, people within the organization. I'm just very, very fortunate to have been drafted by the Chicago Bears.
I always like when you talk about the mentality that you and Gary played with. Kind of explain it to everyone.
You know what? Many of those seasons were losses. I mean, those were 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And it was so much fun to have somebody that was motivating you every single play. And I was trying to do the same thing with him. You know, he wore 45, I wore 46. So many times during the game, we would be accused of things, hits, that the other one had done. And, you know, I can't tell you how many times people called me Fensick during the game or even after my career, thinking I was Gary Fensick, you know, because I had 46 versus 45. But when I arrived here, I said, you know, this place is known for defense and Dick Butkus. Why can't we make the safety position just like it?
Did you bring that with you from college?
You know, I went to Ohio State.
Right.
And
Woody Hayes, right?
Woody Hayes.
So, I mean, you talk about a George Halas-type figure
yes.
in the college atmosphere. Is that what brought you to Chicago and your style of play?
You know, unfortunately for myself, the first day at Ohio State, I managed to tear my ACL, my MCL, and cartilage.
Wow.
So my freshman year was done. So I played primarily special teams. And so I was on all the kickoff teams, Tom. So you know what happened? When you're on a kickoff team over and over and over again, you develop a mentality.
Right.
Take no prisoners. If I can't tackle the running back, I'm going to tackle the blockers, the tackles, the guards. It doesn't matter who it is, the wedge.
Yep.
But when you're only on the field for those limited amount of plays, you have to expend your entire day's energy. That's exactly what I started doing. So I had that mentality when I came here, that special teams, take no prisoners, line up 10, 11 yards, somebody's going to get hit on this play.
And advice carries through today.
And even your former college teammates weren't safe. I remember you telling me a story recently, right, about how you went up to some guys that went to Ohio State.
Exactly.
What did you tell them?
Well, I just, you know, it's hard to have friendships like in college, and now you get in the National Football League, and they expect that same friendship to continue. Well, once the game starts and the mentality and the way that this was the whole defense was designed, I just told them, we are not friends for the next 60 minutes. So I expect you to come and hit me every chance you get because I'm going to do exactly the same thing to you.
You know, funny, so I was telling Doug, in the USFL, Doug was signing with the Chicago Blitz, and we are going to have to play him when I was in Arizona. And my greatest fear was going to play them because of Doug Plank. And I was born here in 61, and Fensick and Plank were like watching NASCAR. You just waited for the crash. And you instilled a reputation in me as a young offensive lineman to fear that type of attitude.
Yes. You know, one thing when I first got here, and I had really not played free safety ever before in my life, although I told them I did, because the position was open, your rookie year, hey, you just have to stretch the truth a little bit. Sure, I played free safety. And so I had the opportunity to go there, but I learned a lot Tom, from watching the offensive linemen, is a safety, they tell you every single time what the play is going to be. If it's a pass, they're on their back, you know, back up.
Right.
If it's a run, they're going to cross the line of scrimmage. So forget about the backfield. Forget about the fakes and all that kind of stuff. They're going to tell you immediately run or pass. So that's why the offensive linemen were such a big part of my game plan. But I'll just say this. When you're running full speed and you put your head down, everybody has white pants on. So I have to tell you, I hit plenty of offensive linemen, but I hit our own linemen in the back of the legs many, many times.
Did that cause some consternation in the locker room and at practice? I mean, it had to, right? I mean, were there fists flying? Was the fur flying?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know, there were people – I got choked out several times at practice.
No kidding.
Not just even against the other thing. But I learned in college that Woody Hayes always taught us, you are going to play the way you practice. So I always looked at practice different than most people. You know, whether it was Brian Bashenegel, who came from Ohio State, I had no problem hitting him every single time he came across the middle. So when I worked hard on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, it was so easy for the game because now there's a crowd cheering you on top of all the things that you've done all week. It was just like you just walked onto the field and just turned the switch.
Brimming adrenaline, right?
It was, and it just was automatic.
My most memorable Doug Plank hit versus Tampa Bay Monday Night Football. I'm sitting in the first row. Right at the 10-yard line, and Jimmy Giles makes the mistake of coming over the middle. You want to take it from there?
You know, I was not expected to play that week because I broke ribs, cracked ribs the week before with the Steelers. But Jimmy Giles was their main target, main receiver. And I knew sooner than later, that was a Monday night game, that Jimmy Giles was going to come down the middle of the field. And so Buddy Ryan said, I want you to do one thing tonight. I want you to hit Jimmy Giles. So for almost the majority of the first half, he was running out routes and inside routes and short routes. Every time I broke the huddle, I'd say, Jimmy Giles down the middle. Jimmy Giles down the middle. Every single time, at every defensive play, I broke the huddle. I'd go back to my position. Jimmy Giles is coming down the middle. He finally came down the middle. 2 minutes left in the first half, and that was it.
Destroyed. And didn't you get, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't you get fined more for that hit than you made in the game?
It took me almost three games to pay for that fine. What happened was, and again, even then, you know, there was still attention now, you know, lower your helmet. Could I play today? Probably not, you know, just because of the rules and regulations and things like that.
There's no spearing, Doug.
There's no spearing. But when that is like
did.
The marquee element of your game and intimidation and... you know, that was just a big part of it. And growing up, I was really just going back to the special teams and kickoff team. How can you play on a kickoff team and not put your helmet down?
Right.
You know, and lower it and take out wedges. And
the crazy thing is, like he said, you know, you started five college football games. Your role was special teams. But at a listed 6 feet 190, tell us the truth on how tall you really were and how much you carried, and did you maintain that weight over the course of the season?
Yeah, generally, I mean, I really, it's hard to maintain weight, though, as you know, Tommy, you know, because you're literally battling players every single week, and especially for the most part of my career, I played all the special teams, so I was on the kickoff return, punt return, on top of a full load of defense. It's hard to maintain your weight, so I would drop weight. I'm not saying I got dropped down to, you know, probably less than 190 pounds, but, you know, one thing, I'm very glad Clyde Emmerich, you know, the former weight coach, he did incredible things and helped me so much in terms of becoming a better player. And he made working out and conditioning a fun, enjoyment. And so it was competitive, but I became a different player here in Chicago.
He wrapped the armor on you. But real quick, I just want to know, where did you get the power? How did you get it? Is it a physics equation here with acceleration times force equals what you did?
No, because sports science.
No, I mean
weightlifting, thickness.
Right. I know, but you know, carrying that amount of weight. I mean, today you know they'd be looking at you. I don't know, 6 feet 190
right.
Playing safety. I don't think so.
You know, there was another guy that I likened myself with that played after me, Chuck Cecil, and Chuck was even lighter than I was. I really think, and I think it's the ability to suppress your survival instinct. What that means You can run at something and you have absolutely no fear because you've conditioned yourself all week long or all throughout your life that you are never going to stop.
46. Your jersey number, the name of a defense, lines from a Super Bowl shuffle. When was the first time Buddy Ryan came to you and said 46? Hey, we're talking about what is referred to now as the Bear defense, because that's the term what other teams will use for
I was going to ask him the same question, because unfortunately his career ended before the Super Bowl. But when you think 85 Bears, you think 46 defense.
Absolutely.
And the reason it's 46 defense is because of 46.
Right.
Larry, it's so funny because most people think I was on the – that's what's nice about it. So many years go by, it just becomes mixed and things. And I actually, the first couple weeks that I was here, I was wearing number 25. And no one knows this. And we traded for an all-pro receiver from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Ron Shanklin. And much like the Coca-Cola commercial, the first practice he got out there, he saw me in 25. That was his number. He goes, "Rookie, you got my jersey on." I'll never forget this. Over there at Lake Forest College, taking his shirt off like this and throwing it at him. And then going downstairs and asking the equipment,
You didn't get anything out of it today? You know, things.
Was it Ray
like
Early?
Money.
Ray Early,
Ray
the
Early,
equipment manager?
I goes, "How about 46? I go, "Sounds good to me."
Yeah. Right.
But it was probably like 79, 80 when Buddy first drew this thing up. And he was drawing up things every single day. Every day we came in.
Well, it's good because the 25 front wouldn't have sounded.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
And he drew up this defense, and again, he never called anybody by the name. You were a number or you were an adjective, and usually it wasn't a very complimentary adjective. So I was a number. I was very thankful, and he drew up all these numbers on there, and he brought me down from the free safety position and put me right in that middle linebacker position, and he just circled my number three times, and he said, "We're going to call this the 46 defense." Now, no one really thought it was unusual because probably half the people in that room had something named after them, a blitz, a coverage, something. And it just grew. And obviously, as the organization put better players, more gifted players into that scheme, it became unstoppable, especially with a two-back tight end offense.
Right. When you first saw it with the did you realize it was a personnel-based defense that you needed the right guys to pull this off? Or did you think this was going to revolutionize defensive football and forget the odd fronts, forget the even fronts, it was going to be 46? Because other teams have tried it and haven't been successful.
Right. Well, he had me actually playing half the field sometimes. I'm playing half the field like a safety would. The safeties you see now back at 13, 15 yards, that's where I was back there. I had at the linebacker position, I had to make a read, run or pass, usually looking at offensive guards, and then drop back sometimes in half the field from the linebacker spot. But one thing he asked me to do many times too, look, read the line and take on guards, take on pulling guards, sweeps. You know, when you're 200 pounds, and they weren't many 300-pounders, but there was a lot of 280, 290 guys running around. I got to tell you, you know, there were several times I was almost like knocked out on my feet.
Noah Jackson, Revy Sorry. You had to be practicing against those guys.
Practicing against those guys.
And you're talking about, you know, 295-pound offensive guards that can move.
Yeah, when you came up there, I'll tell you what, that's where the men play.
Right.
And I just learned one thing real fast. Whether, you know, you play offense or defense, it's the line of scrimmage that usually is going to dictate who wins and who loses. And I found that out the hard ways many times, taking on guys and getting up off the ground, and my helmet would be turned sideways, and I'm looking out the ear hole. And I would say, this is where the men are at.
Your career ended in 1982, correct?
My last game was in 82.
82.
It was against the Lions.
So you didn't quite make it to Tom's team in his era.
Right.
After your playing career in that little three-year period, did it bother you that you weren't a part of that, given what you gave?
At the time, I was actually serving Whoppers, you know, over a counter. And, you know, so I made the transition that fast. I think that, you know, that's one thing the players really need to do when their athletic career comes to a conclusion. I think it's important for them to transition and go into something else right away. I felt like I went into something that required 363 days a year of my time and attention. I had no time to feel sorry for myself. I did watch the majority of the games when I could. It was on Sunday. That was our slowest day, you know, in the restaurant business. But I felt like I was going in a totally different direction.
How many Burger Kings did you own at the height?
At the height, it was 13. In Columbus, over a 20-year period, I owned about 22 different stores in Kansas City, Phoenix. And But, you know, I went from player to coach. Now I'm running a business. I'm coaching all these employees. Now, they're not 300 pounds, and they don't have helmets on, but you have to motivate them, get them excited, find the right position for them. You know, it's a drive-through at the front counter. I mean, it was like it was coaching. And I took a lot of the coaching aspects that I loved as a player. You know, we'd have huddles every week, and after lunch rush, we'd get out there and cheer each other on, and who did good today, give grades. You know, as far as performance was concerned, they loved it. They absolutely loved it. One of the things I loved about being an athlete was the Monday mornings, Tom, when they would give you like some menial reward, right, like an igloo cooler.
A sweatsuit for the biggest hit of the year.
They did that?
Yeah. I mean, it was.
No kidding.
It was these $15 items that inspired the room because you got them awarded to you in front of your peers. No greater reward.
I had no idea.
My first year there, when Jack Pardee was my first head coach with Chicago Bears, he would give out an igloo cooler. And it just go what Tom was saying. During the game, there were guys running around on the field saying, I think I just won the Eagles.
Right.
Now I'm thinking, we are in the National Football League, and this guy is running around excited because he thinks he just got the igloo cooler. And you know what? When you would go up in front of the team, everybody would just clap. You know what? There was nothing better.
You know, and that's a great thing about that's teammates because you remember a guy like Steve McMichael going, I got $100 for anybody that's a hit inside the 20-yard line of kickoff coverage. And when you won the $100, it was, you know, yeah, the hit inspired you, but it was that reward.
It's something a bonding
so,
deal.
Yeah. But it was teammates encouraging teammates, coaches encouraging the team.
You talked about coaching your employees. Now, I don't know if a lot of fans know, Doug went on to be a very successful arena coach. And this is just completely out of the blue, but there were some officials here at Hallis Hall the other day, and I was talking to them, and one of them said, we were talking about an unusual play in an NFL game, and he said, you know what? I officiate in the Arena League, and Doug Plank did so many weird things they had to change the rules based on what he did.
Well, you know, the rule books are made for a reason. They're made to look at. I usually never looked at them. You know what I'm saying? I found out about things that I had broken after I did it. Yeah, maybe Belichick. Right. But I started as a coach. I started reading the rule books, and I started seeing things in there that I could do that would help our team win games.
Gray areas. Yes.
But aren't we expected to try to push our team Absolutely. To the limit, just like we do in practice, anything? And you can't treat everybody the same. Everybody's different. But I would get that rule book, and I would say, what can we do? What, based on this person's skills and abilities, how can I put him on this team, offense or defense, and have him maximize his productivity? So I was constantly in that book, and, you know, whether it was hitting guys in motion in the Arena League, which they changed, you know, those guys would come around in motion at the line of scrimmage. I would have guys chop their legs out right at the line of scrimmage. They would go flying in the air. That rule changed within an hour after the game.
got a call from the commissioner during a game once.
During a game. I mean, I'm literally over the phone. Yes, commissioner. Yes, commissioner. Imagine that in the National Football League.
Now, how did you kill the clock? That was an interesting story.
Well, you know, most times teams just try to run the clock out, keep the ball on the field, don't throw the ball for incompletions. And I devised a plan where instead of even trying to run a play, we would line up in an offensive formation. I would bring in my most physical, athletic guys, mostly linebackers. And when the ball was snapped, they would tackle everybody on defense. I mean, down to the ground, just like high school. Fireman's carry, whatever you want to call it, and they're down there not just for a couple seconds, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and everybody on the defense that's rushing is tackled and held down. And a quarterback, I'd bring in a more athletic quarterback that could run around. I would have him go to the other end zone now and just wait for whoever else could get up. And when a lineman got up, by the time he was done getting held, running 30 or 40 yards down the field, trying to chase an athletic quarterback, it never happened. We were running like a minute off every single play. Forget about timeouts. Don't even need the timeouts. And usually, you know, if the ball got within the end of the game, 3 or 4 minutes, I would go into this. I called it the burn package for burning time. It was very entertaining.
You take the 10-yard penalty and just throw it.
Exactly. We would laugh. We would gladly go back 10 yards. Because the clock.
You analyze games for Westwood One and Sports USA Network. You analyze the Bears game on Sunday against the Green Bay Packers. Do you still like the way the game is being played by the men who play it, the men who coach it, and how it's administrated today?
I think so. I mean, I think, let's face it, you have to deal with reality right now. And I think the biggest concern, obviously, is injuries for the players and head trauma specifically. And I think the things that have been enacted in the last few years are all good. They're all benefits, and they're helping, you know, on top of equipment. I think some of the equipment years ago, obviously, it's been outdated, updated. But no, I still thoroughly enjoy watching a NFL game. Is it a little different than when I played? Yes, it is. You know, there isn't so much leading with your helmet and things like that. But this is still, anybody that goes out on that football field, and if they were to play football, even the rules today, I would challenge them to say that they don't think that that's a physical game. There's still people limping off that field. That's a reason. There's a reason for that. And there's still bodies flying around. You know, Tom and I talked just a few minutes ago about how the size of the players have changed so much and how dietary and strength and all those sort of things. Those are strong human beings out there. And so, I mean, having them just recklessly just run into each other without any rules or regulations, I don't think that's the best for. So what's happened so far, I'm all encouraged of it, and I think it's a good idea.
Well, hopefully there are many young players out there have that same mentality and bring it to Sundays or Saturdays or Friday nights or whatever it is, because it's a great game. And yes, you still got to have the right form and tackle properly, but no better game. It makes men out of you, that's for sure.
No doubt.
Hey, we had a great time. We could spend another hour with Doug Plank, no doubt about it. There's plenty of stories. Just one last question. If there was somebody you didn't tag the way you wanted to that played the game, is he still in your head? I wish I had one more crack at just one guy. You got one, because we got to run.
Probably Earl Campbell. I mean, I tagged him a couple times, but he tagged me a couple times.
Of course he did.
And but you know what? You know, I feel like I left something behind. And if they remember who you are, I meet a lot of players, ex-players. You know, it's an honor when they say, I know who you are. Because they knew that when we played each other that somebody was going to go down. And hopefully it was them instead of me.
Thank you so much for spending this time.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Former Chicago Bear Doug Plank joining us. For Larry Mayer, Tom Thayer, I'm Jeff Joniak. Thanks for watching Chicago Bears Roundtable.